welcome to the Early Years Parenting Podcast, brought to you by Number 9 The Nursery in Croydon. I'm Jessie Cox and I'm your host today, as well as the Head of Business Development at Number 9 The Nursery. And today we are joined by Dr. Janet Aylott. Janet is a registered nutritionist with over 25 years experience across many different areas, including infant and child nutrition. She works with nurseries and preschools to improve the food and nutrition we give to our young children. She's also a mum of two now grown-up boys, so you are in very good hands today. Janet, thank you so much for joining us today. On previous podcasts, we've discussed fussy eaters and weaning babies. And today we want to be talking about how to build healthy food habits with our children. Now, Janet, do food habits start in childhood or do they start much later?
Well, actually, they start before childhood. So what we've found out in the last few years through lots of scientific research is that actually during pregnancy, babies can form food habits.
Wow.
So what a mum eats during pregnancy can have an influence on what their child will like and dislike as they go into toddlerhood.
That is crazy. I've already messed my children up then. I'm not pregnant anymore. Can you talk to me a bit about that? So is that just, how does that even work in pregnancy?
So obviously during pregnancy, there are substances moving between mum and baby all the time, whether that be hormones, nutrients, crossing into the baby through the placenta.
Wow.
And recent evidence has shown that things like, for example, if you were to eat green leafy vegetables like broccoli,
yeah,
the taste of that can actually lead to taste preferences in young children.
Wow.
So yeah, studies have been done showing children who are exposed to things like broccoli in pregnancy actually are more likely to accept those tastes when they go through the weaning process.
Well, that explains a lot about my kids and why they like chocolate and pasta.
Absolutely.
I think that's all I ate during pregnancy. Gosh, that's so interesting. So by the time they've even arrived with us, they've already got a preference of what they want and what they don't want.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, obviously what you then do as they grow has an influence too. So the process of weaning onto solid foods is really important in terms of leading to taste preferences in children. So exposing children to a really wide range of different foods in those early stages is really, really important.
And sometimes it can be really hard to even think, because if you haven't had that or your diet's not like that, it's really tough, isn't it, to try and think of something else to give them?
Yeah, absolutely. And the weaning advice has changed quite a lot over the years, even since I weaned my kids many years ago. But the weaning advice now is to actually start with those more bitter vegetables.
Wow.
So starting with spinach and broccoli, avocado, rather than starting with baby rices and purees.
Wow.
Because of that taste preference, because babies are more likely to like sweet tastes.
Yeah.
So if you can change that taste preference very, very early on, then you're more likely to get that wider range of different tastes as they get older.
Gosh, that's so interesting. And obviously it's changed since I even weaned my babies, because when we were told it was baby rice and,
yeah,
porridge.
Absolutely. So I think, and things do move on as the evidence comes along with us. And there's been a lot of research into how we develop these more savoury tastes in children going forward, because there's so much research showing that having that wider range of foods in the diet is important, both with babies and toddlers, but also as we go into adulthood too.
Yeah, wow, that's so interesting, because most children just want to eat sweet stuff, let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as a parent, your responsibility is to try and guide your child into that more varied and balanced diet, but at the same time having those sweet treats if that's something that you want to include in your diet. But it's about getting that balance and understanding how to get that variety in the diet.
Yeah,
more importantly.
So what are good food habits? Like when we're talking about how to build them, what is it that we're aiming for? What's the mark?
So really there's a few things that we need to be thinking about. The first is having a really wide variety of different foods. So introducing those foods at weaning and carrying on those foods into toddlerhood and into preschool and onto the rest of their lives. The second thing we need to be thinking about is establishing a really good mealtime routine. So even from that very early stage of weaning, including the child in the family routine. So sitting up at the table, for example, not having devices, not having the television on in the background, talking about the food that that you're serving up is really, really important. And as baby gets older and is able to eat more family-based foods, then start serving the same foods as everyone else is having. Mm. So don't make it a special occasion for that child. Don't have them sitting in the high chair on their own while everyone else is doing something more fun. So it's about establishing those mealtime routines, having regular set mealtimes, so 3 meals a day and regular snacks, to make sure that we're not constantly having that question about, I'm hungry, when's the next food coming? Children understand that routine and when they're going to get their next meal, which is really important.
Is it important then to have snacks through the day? Because I know snacks in itself, like that's a whole concern for people.
It's a question I get asked all the time about snacks. Yeah. And I think as adults, we're almost told that snacks are bad.
Yeah.
However, that's really not the case, because snacks are another opportunity to provide good nutrition. If you think, sort of flip the coin and think of it in a different way, you have another opportunity. Snack doesn't mean, you know, necessarily a chocolate
poor
bar nutrition, like a chocolate bar or a packet of crisps. It can be some nuts or fruit or cereals, or it can be anything that adds to the diet that you're already having. So for very young children, snacks are super important, because if you imagine a toddler has got a tiny, tiny tummy. Yeah. So you can't physically give them all the energy they need in set meal times. You're going to have to give them extra nutrition at snacks, within snacks. So whether that be, you know, a small piece of fruit, half a piece of fruit, a small biscuit, it could be anything, but just having that interim snack helps to improve energy provision for young children, which they're going to burn off anyway because they're running around and being active.
Yeah. Because you can feel as a parent, you're constantly feeding your children at all times of the day. Is it like you've got set meal times? Is it good to have set snack times?
Yeah, absolutely. And in the same way as in the nursery, you have set snack times, set meal times. Having that process at home really helps children to get that routine and establish when they know they're going to have food and when they're not. So that it's not that constant. It might feel like you're constantly feeding, but you know, if in your mind you know that they're going to have set meals, set snacks, maybe milk if they're still having milk in their diet, when those times are, and then throughout the day, over the period that they're awake, they're having all the nutrition they need.
And when you're saying about, you know, try and encourage them to eat the same things that the family are eating, this is going to sound like a very daft question, but I don't mind looking daft. You know, are there any foods that you just shouldn't be feeding children? You know, is there anything that you think, well, you know, spicy or, you know, it's got too much salt in it? Or is there anything that, like, there's a blanket rule you just shouldn't be feeding them?
Yeah.
That?
So salt is one of the ingredients in food that we have to be a little bit careful of, particularly up to the age of one.
Right.
So if you are a family that heavily salts food, then you shouldn't be giving family food to the children until they're quite a bit older.
Yeah.
Salt as an ingredient in very, very small amounts is fine, but it's about how much you use of it. So things like gravies, stocks, we have to be thinking about. And in the nursery setting, we would use reduced salt or no salt.
Well, they're all gravies, homemade, aren't they?
Exactly.
Without salt.
So you know, you might need to adapt what you're cooking for your family just slightly, just to make it more appropriate for a child. Things like spices, if your family is used to that type of cuisine, if from a cultural point of view you use a lot of spices in cooking, and your child is going to be eating those foods for their lifetime, then exposing them to those sorts of foods very young is appropriate, obviously within limits. And you wouldn't be giving very, very spicy things to a very, very young child, but obviously within the limits of your family setting. But really, by the age of one, a child can have virtually every food.
Wow.
It's usually more about texture and about portion size by that point.
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked about, like, one of the main habits is, you know, the surrounding food and the times. What are the other healthy food habits that we want to be building for our children?
So the other things we need to be considering is the variety. So really thinking about the different food groups and how we get foods from all of those different food groups throughout the course of the day. So, you know, where are we going to get our carbohydrates from? What fruits and vegetables can we include? Where's our source of protein coming from? Mm. And protein is really important for growing children. If you can imagine, a child grows very rapidly in those first 2.5 years of life.
Yeah.
So protein is very important. And often we forget about that
when
we're thinking about meals. So particularly children who don't eat meat, we have to consider, you know, where are we going to get that protein from? Mm. So that variety, that mix of different foods is really important for children as they're growing up.
And should every meal be having protein in it?
Particularly for children, for very young children, yes, every meal should have protein in it. So when you're thinking about a meal, where is that protein going to come from? So some meals it's easier than others. So for example, you may, at breakfast time, eggs are a really good source of protein, depending on what you're going to cook. Yeah. If you're cooking a cooked breakfast, you can also add things like seeds into porridge, cereals, those types of foods. When it comes to lunch and dinner, maybe meat or fish, if you're having those foods in your diet, or pulses are really great. So lentils, beans are really good sources of protein too. So it's often about maybe thinking a little bit more outside the box, what you might be choosing to make and adding extra things in. So for example, if you're making a bolognese sauce, you can actually improve the protein if you're not a meat eater by adding more beans and lentils and those types of things.
Okay. It's a lot to think about, isn't there, as a parent then?
There is a lot to think about, but most of the time you have to think, I'm doing a good job.
Yeah.
I think we all get hung
they're
up
growing.
About they're growing. If a child's happy, growing has got energy to run around, is eating relatively regularly, drinking plenty of fluid, sleeping okay, generally they'll be fine. So try not to get too worried about what's on every single plate. It's more about the process over the course of the day, the week, the month, and what that looks like in terms of their energy provision.
Because we were just saying, before we were recording that, sometimes if I'm feeding the children something, I know they're, it aren't their favourite food. I feel anxious. You sit down to the table and you think, oh, this is going to kick off. So it is hard as a parent, isn't it, to try not to pass that anxiety over. Is that something you see in your line of work?
Definitely. And what we often see is that the more anxious the parent, the less likely the child is to form good eating habits. So if you look at the way that we develop eating habits in the nursery setting, it's about sociability, being with your friends, serving yourself, choosing the portion that you want. And that can actually still be used at home. So having that autonomy almost over what a child eats. And we talk about this concept of the parents provide and the child decides in terms of what they eat. And that might sound a little bit airy-fairy, but it's not. It's about giving that child the opportunity to make choices about the food. So you could give a child, for example, the choice between two different types of vegetables and ask them which one they would like. So they still have to eat a vegetable, but they get to choose carrots or peas. So it's giving autonomy, which gives the child that air of responsibility, but at the same time, you have control as a parent.
That concept for me is really alien, because when I was growing up, you just got handed your plate and you couldn't get up until you were finished.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was exactly the same. And I can remember when I was a child, older than a toddler, but there were used to be incentives to clear your plate. If you went out to a restaurant, you used to get given a lollipop if you cleared your plate, and have that mentality. And I still have that mentality now that, I have to finish. It's rude not to finish everything on your plate.
Yeah.
But actually, what we know now about appetite, and particularly young children, they're very good at controlling how much they need. So if a child eats half a plate of food and says they're full, they probably are full.
Yeah.
So, but as parents, we try and override that, and we try and encourage them
push
to
them
eat
on.
More. When actually they don't want it.
Yeah. And that's so interesting, because we had a play date not that long ago, and the mum said, oh no, he has to finish everything that was on his plate. And I felt horrible for him because I'd piled him up. And I just thought, oh no, if I'd known that, I wouldn't have given him as much because I was being like, oh, here's as much as you want, take it or leave it.
Yeah. And I think that as parents, we try, it's a sign of love, isn't it? You give your child all of the food and all of the, or everything that you think they're going to eat. But we forget that they're very much smaller than us.
Yeah.
And their tummies are very much smaller than us. So giving a child a small portion that they're going to finish is much more rewarding for them than giving them a huge plate of food that overwhelms them. So one of the main tips I would say is to start with, toddler-sized cutlery, toddler-sized bowls, plates, and give them an appropriate portion. And there's some really good information about portion sizes. The British Nutrition Foundation have a whole website dedicated to toddler nutrition, and they have a portion size guide. So it actually shows you how much is an appropriate portion of loads of different foods.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell.
And it's much smaller than you think it's going to be.
Yeah. I could imagine that actually. And you mentioned about children having the ability to kind of, you know, tell when they're full. What age does that stop? Or is
what well, that's we're interesting. Born with, we're born with that ability. So when a baby is born, they have a built-in satiety trigger. Mm. And breastfed babies are very good at controlling their appetite. So if you are a breastfed baby, you basically take as much milk as you need.
Yeah.
Babies who are fed by formula, often parents override that satiety cue because you're told to feed a certain amount.
Yeah, they need their 6 ounces. Exactly. They have to have 6 ounces.
When actually, if they were a breastfed baby, they would be stopping.
Yeah.
So we're born with that, but often we override that satiety cue. So it's really important when you're weaning that you don't force a child to eat what they don't want. And if a child is growing and is happy and is sleeping, all of those things, they're having enough.
Sleep and food is a big thing for parents, isn't it? I mean, my children are much older now, but I am so tired. I think there's a thing in your head as a mum where you think if I fill their bellies up, they'll sleep through. Is it as linked as much as we think it is?
It's definitely linked. And one of the key things about setting up this mealtime routine is about getting that nutrition they need in to their tummies during the waking hours.
Yeah.
Because if you can do that, they're less likely to wake in the night and be hungry.
Yeah.
For sure there are, you know, some children won't have achieved all the nutrition they need in the day because of the way that their eating habits might be formed.
Yeah.
So they may still be hungry. But most children, if they have reached an age where they're having 3 meals and a couple of snacks a day, they don't need to eat overnight.
Yeah.
It's just they just physically don't need to eat overnight.
They need to sleep.
They need to sleep. So having, you know, bottles, if children continue to have bottles overnight once they're already on 3 meals and 2 snacks a day, it's going to affect their appetite.
They're just not going to eat as much, are they?
So it's a vicious circle.
Yeah. And round you go, getting up in the night.
Yeah.
Okay. So for you, if you could give us, you know, some things that to focus on to build good habits, what would that be for parents?
So there are a few things. Firstly, getting that variety. So exposing your children to all of the different foods that you eat in your diet or that you don't eat, things that you want them to eat going forward. If you want them to eat avocados and you want them to eat smoked salmon and you want them to eat steak and you want them to eat chicken and you want them to eat pasta, you have to give it to them when they're younger so that they get those tastes. So it's exposing them to a really wide variety of different foods and keep trying as well, because it can take 10 to 12 times for children to actually accept new tastes.
Wow, 10 to 12 times.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes we just do it like 3 times. I think, I've given it a go.
Yeah. And you're not alone in that, because it's a frustrating business. But actually, having that repeated exposure really does work.
Yeah.
And often if a child won't even try a food, having it on their plate, asking them to touch it, feel it, you know, have you gotten somewhere you can grow vegetables in the garden, or is there, can you take them to a supermarket and get them to feel different foods? There's lots of different ways to expose children to new foods without them actually physically eating them.
Wow.
Playtime with food, all sorts of things, songs about food, books about food.
Yeah.
There's so many things around. So that's a really, really important part.
I find this conversation so interesting, and I think it's even going to change the way I'm handling things in my house. When you're introducing food that you know they aren't their favourite food, is it worth putting that new food in with food you know they eat, or is it better just kind of going cold turkey and going straight for the new food?
No, absolutely worthwhile adding the foods they like with foods that you're not sure about.
Right.
That sense of familiarity makes the child feel more comfortable.
Okay.
If you put a plate of food in front of them, they don't recognize, they don't like what they see in front of them, it can completely turn them off.
Yeah.
So if you've got things there that they can choose that they do like, even if the food they don't like is touching the food they do like, it can cause some children to be concerned. But, you know, having that familiarity is really important.
And is there, I mean, we talked a little bit before we came on air about, you know, this sense of control. Is there any merit for letting them, you know, at the nursery, it's self-service, so we lay it out in the middle of the table and then they can help themselves. Is it worth doing that at home as well?
Absolutely, yes. Self-serving at home is a really good way to actually get children to try new things, to actually self-serve the right portion as well. So understanding how much they might want on their plate. They might only take three peas or three bits of sweet corn, but they're still putting that food on their plate and they're more likely to eat it rather than you putting a large amount of food on the plate. So self-serving at home is a really, and it's also a really good sociable way to encourage good behaviour at the table.
And one of the things that I've noticed about my children is that they have kind of like hungry days and days where they don't want any food, or what to me seems like they don't want any food. Is that normal for children?
That's absolutely normal. So if you can imagine in a child's little body, there's so many things going on. There's lots of cells growing and different stages in their development. They will have growth spurts. They will have days when their body's working overtime, trying to grow muscle and bone and brain cells and all sorts of things. And they need to feed that through the food that they eat. And there's other times where it will be much quieter in their bodies and they won't need those extra foods. And that continues right the way through until growing stops, which happens around the age of 20, 21.
Oh my gosh.
So even in my kids who are older teenagers, they have gone through massive growth spurts where you literally can't feed them enough.
Yeah.
And then the next week you'll go out and buy, I've gone out and bought all the foods they love and filled the fridge up with the favourite yoghurt or their favourite snack, and then they don't want them anymore.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the typical thing, isn't it? They want to eat all your bananas. You go out and buy more bananas. No one wants bananas.
Absolutely. That's just children's prerogative.
Okay. It's good to know we're not alone in this. And is there any like research on, particularly I'm thinking like with boys and growth, if you're limiting food, does it affect their growth or their height potential?
Absolutely. So if you imagine that any person, any human being is on a trajectory of how they're going to grow.
Yeah.
And we actually grow half of our adult height in the first 2.5 years of life.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
Which is crazy. When you think about a 2.5-year-old and how tall they are, it's well, scientifically well evidenced that growth in that first 2.5 years is super, super important. So if we start restricting calories and nutrition in those first years of life, it can have an impact for sure on later life growth and development. So we have to be very mindful that we need to be making sure that our children are getting all of the nutrition they need. And that might mean for some children that they have second helpings or third helpings, or they have an extra bottle. But that's absolutely fine because that's what that child needs. We don't need to be worrying about weight. We don't need to be worrying about those types of things when children are very young, because that's when the food habits are formed. So if we start restricting food very early on, it can cause problems both physically and emotionally later in life.
So that's so interesting because, thankfully she's not listening to this, but when my little girl, was kind of 7 or 8 months, she'd often look wider before she'd look taller. And I'd have that panic of thinking, oh my gosh, maybe I'm overfeeding her. And then in a week's time, she'd have a massive growth spurt and she was slender again. Is that just the normal way kids grow?
That's absolutely normal. That's what growth and development's all about. So the body won't grow until it's got the resources to do so. So if you imagine, you're almost laying down all the tools that you need for the building blocks to do that growth. And those building blocks all come from the diet, from our nutrition.
Because they don't really check children's weight and height till much later, do they? It's like normally around about school age.
Yeah, so there's a national program where weight and height is measured at entry to school at reception and then exit from primary school at year six. And that's used to look at the trajectory of growth in school children or in young children in the UK. And it's a really useful tool because it helps us to understand what's happening in terms of health and nutrition. There's lots of noise around food and nutrition at the moment and lots of big names talking about nutrition. What we find from my profession is often those people don't have qualifications in nutrition, which is quite frustrating because actually nutrition science is a very, very stable environment. You know, things haven't changed a whole lot in terms of what we know in terms of nutrition guidance, healthy eating habits, those types of things haven't really changed very much in the last 30 years. But there's been a lot of noise around non-scientific applications in terms of food habits.
So a lot about processed food at the minute, isn't it? It's a big topic.
And for sure, we should be aiming to have less processed foods in our diets, but it's all about the terminology. What does processed really mean? Because if you were to actually to look in your food cupboard, the majority of foods is processed. And even things that you think aren't processed are processed. Even milk is processed because we don't drink it straight from the cow, for example.
Yeah.
So we have to think about the terminology a little bit more differently.
Yeah.
And think about, you know, what foods are we giving to our children, and are we giving them a good variety?
Mm.
And actually, for them to have something that might be classed as processed is fine if it's part of that overall healthy, balanced diet. So it's about taking the pressure off a little bit and thinking, I'm doing a good job.
And I love what you said today about, you know, parents can override a child's own ability to kind of self-regulate when they're full or not. And I think that's something I've definitely done.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we all do, don't we? We do what we've been taught to do, and you've got to break your own habits from your own childhood, your own background, what you've grown up with. So I love some of the things that you said today. It has made me think I'm definitely going to be doing some things differently. Every time I do these podcasts, I go away thinking, right, that's it, children, we need to do something different. So thank you so much for your knowledge and your expertise. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you. I always learn so much. And thank you at home for listening. And if you've got any questions for us, we would be delighted to answer them. You can get in touch with us on our website, which is number9thenursery.co.uk, or you can email us at manager@number9thenursery.co.uk. So until we speak again, take care of yourselves and get in touch. Speak soon.